The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. We're going to start with the next blog from author Ursula Le Guin, and it's from her book of blogs. So this one is The Diminished Thing, and it was written in May of 2013. Not wanting to know much about getting old, I don't mean older, I mean old, late 70s, 80s, beyond, is probably a human survival characteristic. What's the use of knowing anything about it ahead of time? You'll find out enough when you get there. One of the things people often find when they get there is that younger people don't want to hear about it. So, honest conversation concerning geezerhood takes place mostly among geezers. And when younger people tell old people what old age is, the geezers may not agree, but seldom argue. I want to argue, just a little. Robert Frost's Ovenbird asked the operative question, what to make of a diminished thing? Americans believe strongly in positive thinking. Positive thinking is great. It works best when based on a realistic assessment and acceptance of the actual situation. Positive thinking founded on denial may not be so great. Everybody who gets old has to assess their ever-changing but seldom improving situation and make of it what they can. I think most old people accept the fact that they're old. I've never heard anybody over 80 say, I'm not old. And they make the best of it. As the saying goes, consider the alternative. A lot of younger people, seeing the reality of old age as entirely negative, see acceptance of age as negative. Wanting to deal with old people in a positive spirit, they're led to deny old people their reality. With all good intentions, people say to me, oh, you're not old. And the Pope isn't Catholic. You're only as old as you think you are. Now, you don't honestly think having lived 83 years is a matter of opinion? My uncle's 90 and he walks 8 miles a day. Lucky unk. I hope he never meets that old bully arthritis or his mean wife sciatica. My grandmother lives all by herself and she's still driving her car at 99. Well, hey for Granny. She's got good genes. She's a great example, but not one most people are able to imitate. Old age isn't a state of mind, it's an existential situation. Would you say to a person paralyzed from the waist down, oh, you aren't a cripple. You're only as paralyzed as you think you are. My cousin broke her back once, but she got right over it, and now she's in training for the marathon. Encouragement by denial, however well-meaning, backfires. Fear is seldom wise and never kind. Who is it you're cheering up, anyhow? Is it really the geezer? To tell me my old age doesn't exist is to tell me I don't exist. Erase my age, you erase my life. Me. Of course, that's what a lot of really young people inevitably do. Kids who haven't lived with geezers don't know what they are. So it is that old men come to learn the invisibility women learned 20 or 30 years earlier. The kids on the street don't see you. If they have to see you, it's often with the indifference, distrust, or animosity animals feel for animals of a different species. Animals have instinctive codes of etiquette for avoiding or diffusing the mindless fear and hostility. Dogs ceremoniously smell each other's anuses. Cats ceremoniously yowl on the territorial borderline. Human societies provide us with various more elaborate devices. One of the most effective is respect. You don't like the stranger, but you show carefully respectful behavior to him and that elicits the same from him, thus avoiding the sterile expense of time and blood on aggression and defense. In less change-oriented societies than ours, a great part of the culture's useful information, including the rules of behavior, is taught by the elders to the young. One of those rules is, unsurprisingly, a tradition of respect for age. In our increasingly unstable, future-oriented, technology-driven society, the young are often the ones who show the way, who teach their elders what to do. So, who respects whom for what? The geezers are damned if they're going to kowtow to the twerps, and vice versa. When there's no social pressure behind it, respectful behavior becomes a decision, an individual choice. Americans, even when they pay pious lip service to Judeo-Christian rules of moral behavior, tend to regard moral behavior as a personal decision, above rules and often above laws. This is morally problematic when personal decision is confused with personal opinion. A decision worthy of the name is based on observation, factual information, intellectual and ethical judgment. Opinion, that darling of the press, the politician, and the poll, may be based on no information at all. At worst, unchecked by either judgment or moral tradition, personal opinion may reflect nothing but ignorance, jealousy, and fear. So, if I decide, if my opinion is, that living a long time just means getting ugly, weak, useless, and in the way, I waste no respect on old people, just as if my opinion is that all young people are scary, insolent, unreliable, and unteachable. I waste no respect on them. Respect has often been over-enforced and almost universally misplaced. The poor must respect the rich, all women must respect all men, etc. But when applied in moderation and with judgment, the social requirement of respectful behavior to others by repressing aggression and requiring self-control makes room for understanding. It creates a space where appreciation and affection can grow. Opinion all too often leaves no room for anything but itself. People whose society doesn't teach them respect for childhood are lucky if they learn to understand or value or even like their own children. Children who aren't taught respect for old age are likely to fear it and to discover understanding and affection for old people only by luck, by chance. I think the tradition of respecting age in itself has some justification. Just coping with daily life, doing stuff that was always so easy you didn't notice it, gets harder in old age, till it may take real courage to do it at all. Old age generally involves pain and danger and inevitably ends in death. The acceptance of that takes courage. Courage deserves respect. So much for respect. Back to the diminished thing. Childhood is when you keep gaining. Old age is when you keep losing. The golden years the PR people keep gloating at us about are golden because that's the color of the light at the sunset. Of course, diminishment isn't all there is to aging. Far from it. Life out of the rat race, but still in the comfort zone, can give the chance to be in the real moment and bring real peace of mind. If memory remains sound and the thinking mind retains its vigor, an old intelligence may have extraordinary breadth and depth of understanding. It's had more time to gather knowledge and more practice in comparison and judgment. No matter if the knowledge is intellectual or practical or emotional, if it concerns alpine ecosystems or the Buddha nature, or how to reassure a frightened child. When you meet an old person with that kind of knowledge, if you have the sense of a bean sprout, you know you're in a rare and irreproducible presence. Same goes for old people who keep their skill at any craft or art they've worked at for all those years. Practice does make perfect. They know how, they know it all, and beauty flows effortlessly from what they do. But all such enlargements brought by living long are under threat from the lessening of strength and stamina, however well compensated for by intelligent coping mechanisms, small or large breakdowns in one bit of the body or another begin to restrict activity while the memory is dealing with overload and slippage. Existence in old age is progressively diminished by each of those losses and restrictions. It's no use saying it isn't so, because it is. It's no use making a fuss about it or being afraid of it either, because nobody can change it. Yes, I know we are, at the moment in America, living longer. 90 is the new 70, etc. That's generally taken to be a good thing. How good? In what respects? I recommend studying the oven birds question long and seriously. There are many answers to it. A lot can be made of a diminished thing, if you work at it. A lot of people, young and old, are working at it. All I'm asking people who aren't yet really old is to think about the oven birds question, too, and try not to diminish old age itself. Let age be age. Let your old relative or old friend be who they are. Denial serves nothing, no one, no purpose. Please understand, I'm speaking for myself, for my own crabby old age. I may get told off for it by herds of enraged octogenarians who like being told they're spry and feisty. I don't begrudge the fairy tale to those who want to believe it, and if I live longer than I think I want to, maybe I'll even come to want to hear it. You're not old. Nobody's old. We're all living happily ever after. Our next article is from AARP Bulletin. Where We Stand. What a Tough Year Taught Us. Finding rays of light in the darkest days of 2020 showed our resilience. This has been a year like no other we've ever known. The COVID-19 pandemic, the rise in racial tensions and violence, and an extremely contentious election have combined to disrupt our daily lives, to create new challenges, and to question long-held beliefs. The losses, the pain and suffering and anxiety that we have all endured are well documented. Millions of people have lost their jobs, seen their savings depleted, and taken on additional responsibilities as caregivers or as home nurses for a sick partner, parent, or child. Staying at home has also taken a toll on our mental and emotional health. It's been especially difficult for older Americans and their families who face high risks not only medically and financially, but also socially as a result of increased isolation and loneliness. Still, as has been the case throughout our history, the American people have demonstrated remarkable resilience in adapting to this new normal. We have learned how we can use technology to stay connected and diminish the isolation that sets in when personal contact decreases or is just not possible. By embracing technology, we have speeded up emerging trends in telemedicine, remote working, distance learning, and long-distance caregiving. These new tools now assist us in many of our daily activities, including banking, shopping, ordering groceries, and getting our prescriptions filled. The challenges of this year have given us time to focus on ourselves as well. We've been able to clear out our houses and get rid of things we didn't need. We've rearranged our homes to also serve as offices, classrooms, and movie theaters. Many of us have taken this as a moment to increase our savings because there are fewer day-to-day expenses. Working from home has allowed some of us to save money on commuting costs, parking, road tolls, and public transportation. And we are not spending as much money on travel, eating out, movies, concerts, sporting events, haircuts, new clothes, and dry cleaning. This past year has given us time to pause and think about what's important in life and what we want to do once we return to some sense of normalcy. Racial tensions have caused many of us to reflect on the kind of country we want and to fight even harder for social justice. In some unexpected ways, social distancing has brought us closer together. By not being able to spend time with friends and colleagues, we've come to realize how important those relationships are to us, and in many cases, they have become stronger. Many families have grown closer just by virtue of having to spend so much time with one another. It's made them realize that continuing to nurture these relationships will be a priority once the pandemic is over. As we close out this year, so this was written at the end of last year, look forward to that time when we get past this pandemic and our lives return to routine. I'm reminded of the old saying that goes, with each ending comes a new beginning. The question we need to ask is, what will we make of this fresh start? Hopefully, we have all learned something from the events of this tumultuous year, and we will use those lessons to live better as we age. And this was by Joanne Jenkins. Now let's go to the AARP magazine and some words of wisdom from Tina Turner, the queen of rock and roll riffs on her health, karma, and forgiveness. And there is a lovely picture of her with this article. Healing from within. As a kid, I wanted to get away from working in the cotton fields of Tennessee. I dreamed of going to Hollywood, although I had no idea where that was. Most of all, I dreamed of living a life filled with love and harmony. My mother did not want me, so I focused within for my sense of security. Even in my darkest days, I realized that when I sincerely strove to help myself and kept a peaceful, hopeful outlook, magical things happened. Eventually, I was able to heal my heart and give myself the love I hadn't received when I was young. I like to say that I changed poison into medicine and transformed the difficulties in my life to realize my dreams. Power and forgiveness. My mother and I got closer later in life, and I forgave her. I helped her move out to Los Angeles, where she saw my career break through. And I forgave my former husband, Ike Turner, too, for years of domestic violence, black eyes, busted lips, broken bones, and psychological torture. At one point, I was so despondent I swallowed 50 sleeping pills in a suicide attempt. But I had to make peace with my past, and forgiveness sets us free. I believe in karma, in cause and effect, so forgiving people for the wrongs they've committed is not the same as excusing their actions. Forgiveness is more about cutting the chains of negativity from whatever has caused us pain. And positivity. Spiritually, I believe that all the hard times I went through set up my mission in life, giving hope to others so they can become happy too. Through everything, my purpose was not only to survive and thrive myself, but also to be a positive example and encourage and inspire people to never give up. Cherish yourself. I've had some health challenges in recent years, a stroke, a kidney transplant, colon cancer. Sometimes when we go through such difficult experiences, it can feel like we're in a never-ending winter and that spring will never come. But the greatest gifts of wisdom are often found within such challenges. I now have a heightened appreciation of everyday life and feel more deeply how precious our time on earth is. I want to keep encouraging as many people as I can to cherish their lives. If I can help even one more person to become happy, then I've succeeded. The music of life. It's healthy and important to keep a good sense of humor and maintain lighthearted thoughts, even when faced with serious matters or recalling something painful. Laughter is like music. It lifts your spirit. There's a Buddhist saying, wise people can always find a way to bring out a smile. Be natural. We're all one with nature. Some of us feel it more than others. I've always sensed that unseen universal hum and energy, the nourishing rhythm of nature. It connects us to one another and everything else on this beautiful planet, joined by the mystical essence of Mother Nature, the fundamental energy that gives us life to all things. Sing, or don't. I don't perform anymore, and I don't miss it. I do other things, and think any creative endeavor helps to nourish your soul. Whether it's reading, writing, painting, singing, gardening, volunteering, or even caring for pets or loved ones, Anything that requires your heartfelt focus is creative energy. Aging gratefully. When I turned 80, we had a small celebration, which was lovely. I've definitely grown happier as I've matured, and I have even greater patience and love for others. There is a change in perception, a broadening that comes with age, a greater appreciation for simple things, but you have to love yourself first. And finally, true beauty. People used to talk about my legs as much as they did about my talent, but I was blind to my own beauty. My advice to women who worry about aging is to nurture gratitude for your life. Remember that true beauty comes from within, from the positive qualities of your heart and mind. And most of all, be kind. Kindness is beautiful. Out of that will come happiness, and happiness is sexy. So this interview was as told to Alana Nash. Tina Turner, 81, and a practicing Buddhist, shares her philosophy of living in a new book, Happiness Becomes You, a guide to changing your life for good. Now we have some more words of wisdom, this time from Penn Gillette. My pandemic year, observations of 2020 from magician and entertainer Penn Gillette, 65, whose show Penn and Teller Fool Us airs on the CW network. So this is entitled, You Gotta Laugh. The World Health Organization announced that dogs cannot contract COVID-19. Dogs previously held in quarantine can now be released. To be clear, who let the dogs out? That's WHO, let the dogs out. I ran out of toilet paper and I started using lettuce leaves. Today was just the tip of the iceberg. Tomorrow remains to be seen. This morning I saw a neighbor talking to her cat. It was obvious she thought her cat understood her. I came into my house and told my dog. We both laughed a lot. I haven't cut my hair since the quarantine started. Yesterday, I stepped on a scale for the first time in a while. Who knew that hair weighs so much? My husband bought a world map, gave me a dart, and said, throw this, and wherever it lands, that's where I'm taking you when this pandemic ends. Turns out that we will be spending 2 weeks behind the fridge. What makes me happy? Being able to spend all of my time with my family. What did I learn? You sure don't want to spend all of your time with your family. What makes me happy? Not having to shave. What did I learn? With or without a beard, I don't look like Keanu Reeves, Hugh Jackman, or even David Letterman. What makes me happy? Not seeing Teller every day. What did I learn? Without Teller around, I don't make any money. What makes me happy? Not wearing underwear. What did I learn? Gym shorts should still be changed every 2 weeks. What made me happy? Finishing my novel. What did I learn? Even during a pandemic, my agent doesn't have time to read my novel. And finally, what made me happy? Having time to learn a new language. What did I learn? Foreign languages are impossible to learn. Now, here's a few notes from AARP, the magazine, on three gut-healthy options that aren't. Sweetened yogurt. The bacteria cultures and fermented dairy are absolutely good for your gut, but the added sugars are not. Sugar feeds bad bacteria, causing more harm than good, says Wake Forest University's Kyle Kavanaugh. Wheat bread. Emulsifiers found in shelf-stable supermarket breads may cause damage to the walls of the gut, and many wheat breads aren't whole grain. Look for 100% whole wheat bread with a minimum of chemical additives. Herbal laxative tea. Long-term laxative use, even in the herbal kind, can interfere with intestinal nerve function, notes the Cleveland Clinic. Of particular concern is an herb called senna, which irritates the bowel walls and can cause liver damage. Light prune juice. Non-caloric sweeteners found in light juices can throw off your microbiome. The byproduct from our microbes' digestion of artificial sweeteners are as unhealthy as the byproducts that come from their eating sugar. Packaged veggie burgers. There's nothing wrong with pressing vegetables into a patty, though check the label. The standard supermarket veggie burger is often a blend of fillers such as wheat, gluten, and vegetable oil and chemicals. And finally for today, we're going to look at a few more precautions that the hotels are now taking for us. Robot room service. Some high-tech Yotel hotels are deploying resident R2-D2-style robots to deliver meals and amenities to guest rooms. UV sanitizers. Best Westerns now use UV wands to sterilize room surfaces. In some Marriott hotels, you can clean your cell phones and room keys inside many fridge-like UV sterilizing boxes. Thermal scanners. Many hotels now take your temperature when you walk in. Devices range from thermometer guns at New York New York Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas to tripod-mounted thermal cameras at Wynn Resorts. Cell phone controls. To reduce shared touch points, various hotels have you make some requests, such as ordering room service, luggage, or pick up a shuttle to the airport on your own phone. And these tips are from Veronica Stoddard. And for our last few minutes, a few moments of change. August 18th, 1920, women get the vote. The 19th Amendment is ratified. March 4, 1933, Cabinet Post Frances Perkins becomes first female cabinet member, labor secretary. June 25, 1938, a baseline for all. Federal law sets an equal minimum wage for both sexes. February 19, 1963, Betty Friedan speaks. The Feminine Mystique is published. July 2, 1964, sex bias at work prohibited. Congress outlaws job discrimination based on gender. Well, folks, we've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.